Okay. All right, let's take a few minutes for meditation. So just spend a few minutes letting yourself relax, letting your body relax, and letting your mind just be free to roam for a minute or so. Let your mind be free to roam in the presence of the part of you that really appreciates your mind and your body, the one who's a friend and a good mentor, the one who respects you and thinks the best of you. And let your mind tell you, you can ask it, are there any problems or any concerns that are with you right now? What are those? What are you thinking about or worrying about or concerned about? And give the mind just a chance to tell you. You can ask, what are you concerned about? What your mind often needs to know is that you're present to the problems, you understand them, and you're wanting to help in a non-judgmental way. Help to find whatever is the best solution. So the part of the mind that's really concerned feels it has a wise companion. A caring companion. and spend a few minutes asking those child parts of the unconscious, or just parts of your unconscious that are not readily available to you. You can address those parts and simply ask, does anyone have anything they want to tell me? And give yourself a few moments to be present, to listen. After you've asked the question, you need to ask the question to receive any type of answer. And if you have that part of yourself that is interested and cares, then those parts might speak up. Now, as you create an environment for your mind so that all parts, conscious and unconscious, feel safe and understood and welcomed, let your mind deeply relax. No need to control the mind at all. It's allowing the mind to be without any restraint, just simply, deeply relaxed. Whatever thoughts are there, whatever voices from the unconscious present themselves, whatever worries or daydreams are there, just simply totally relax and allow those to be as they are. As you continue to relax without putting any constraints on the mind or your thoughts, see if you can shift your focus to your breath, the in and outgoing breath. Let the mind do what it does, but see if you can be aware of the in and outgoing breath, and just spend a moment or so following your breath, relaxing as you breathe in and out. continue to relax and focus on your breath. Now see if you can shift your focus slightly to the one who is aware of the breath, your own presence, the one who is present to the in and outgoing breath. Just notice your presence. Notice you, what you are like, what you've always taken yourself to be, your own being, what your own presence is like. You are the Purusha, the one who abides in the body, the one who is Purana. Purana means full. Purusha, the Purana, Pura, the Purusha, that which is absolutely full, just your presence, that fullness that's abiding changelessly present in the body. The Puri is the body. Puri means city. Puri Shayanam. The ones who's resting, the one who's resting in the Puri, in the city, in the body. There is your presence. The presence, your own being. And there is your knowledge. If I were to divide up your experience in a sense, your presence, the Purusha, you, your being, and your knowledge. Your manifest knowledge is everything that is known to you, cognized at this moment. The sense of your body, the sensation of your body, the sounds outside, the in and outgoing breath, whatever thoughts are taking place in the mind, emotions, sensations of any kind. All sensations, all thoughts, all feelings, perception. All are known. Notice your own presence as your breath comes in and out. The silent awareness of your own being. Undisturbed by your thoughts or sensations. Undisturbed by the breath. Your own simple presence. You. The being that you are. The changeless being that you are. What is your most intimate sense of self, of me? And notice the changelessness, the simplicity and the changelessness of me, of who I am. Present to all the thoughts and sensations. Not covered or changed. The very self of all experience, the self of every thought, the self of every emotion. Let's do the chant together, the initial chant. Om Bhadram Karane Vishvinuyama Devaha Bhadram Pashe Makshabhirya Jatraha Stirai Rangai Istushtu Vagum Sastanubihi Vyashema Devahitan Yadayuhu Swastina Indra Vrittashravaha Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha Swastina Sarksho Arishtanemihi Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. One verse 13 of section 2. It's actually the last verse of your volume 1. Tasmai savidvan upasanaya samyaka upasanaya samyaka prashanta chittaya shamanvitaya yenaksharam purusham vedasatyam Provachatam tatputo. It's actually tatputaha, let's do it that way. Provachatam tatputaha. Brahmavidyam. With the previous verse, Parikshalokan, that's the verse that we did last week. This verse is a continuation of that verse, okay, in a sense. Let's just go through the sandhi of the verse, and then I'll connect it up with the previous verse. Tasmai saha vidvan upasanaya samyak prashanta chittaya shama anvitaya yena aksharam purusham veda satyam provacha tam tatvataha brahma vidyam. Okay. I'll break the verse down and then so for the Sanskrit people so that you can see the verse. Tasmai, pronoun, dative, singular. To him, saha vidvan, that teacher, to him, to the one who is qualified, to the adhikari, to the one who has viveka, right? To the one who has recognized, the one who has recognized that nothing in samsara can give me anything lasting, right? Nasti akritaha kritena. That which is akritaha, not produced, is not going to be gained by something, by an action. All that an action can do is produce something. And anything that it produces, it can reach something, it can produce something, it can modify something, it can purify something, it can act upon something. But if it acts upon something creating a change, since what it acts upon creates a change, that change is born. Even reaching something is creating a change, right? Because you're reaching something. So that action creates a result. Because the result is created, that result exists in time. It has a prior condition. Before that, it was not. But the result is created. The result is created, it's time-bound. And so, therefore, an action can't give me what I'm seeking. It can't give me moksha. It can't give me liberation, a state where all is well with me, which is not just a momentary fleeting experience. So the viveki is the one who has come to this recognition, and who, having come to this recognition from the previous verse, parikshalokan, having analyzed their experience, the experiences clearly, recognizing that karma chitan, everything, all of these experiences are born of karma, and karma can only produce a finite result. The brahmanaha, the one who has a sattva buddhi, who has sattvic mind, who has viveka, has the ability to do that. This type of analysis realizes that no amount of activity, no type of activity, no amount of activity, no type of action, no amount of action can give me anything permanent or anything lasting. It's not possible. Recognizing that this person approaches a teacher for the sake of gaining knowledge of that which needs to be known. Gaining knowledge of Brahman, gaining knowledge of the self, gaining knowledge of that which gives moksha. Okay? So, for the sake of the vijnanam, gaining this knowledge, that person approaches a teacher, a guru, sticks in hand, proper attitude, we'll talk about that a little bit more with this verse, with with approaching the teacher with the proper attitude according to Vidhi, according to tradition, approaches the teacher who is a Kshatriya and a Brahmanishtha. The Kshatriya is the one who is well-versed in the Vedas, in the Upanishads, in the Sampradaya, the teaching methodology of the Upanishads, of the Vedanta. The Kshatriya is the one who, having received that vision themselves through that teaching methodology, is then able to give it to the student, is able to pass it on to the student. Okay? So the person who is a Kshatriya and also a Brahmanishtha. Brahmanishtha means for that person, it's not that they've just gone to a pundit and gained this knowledge and have a clear understanding of this knowledge on more or less an intellectual understanding of the knowledge. The Brahmanishtha is the person who has this knowledge, who sees, who recognizes, I am Brahman. And that, both the knowledge and that recognition, are what that person is. That is what is primary to the person. Right? It's not primary to the person if it's just one of the knowledges, like I have this understanding of Brahman, you know, I've studied, I have an understanding of Brahman, and I understand this and I understand that, and all are on equal footing. Right? I have this knowledge, and I have this knowledge, and I have this knowledge. And that's true for everybody. That's true for Brahmanishtha also. I have this knowledge, I have this knowledge, I have this knowledge. But when Brahman, or yourself, is just one of the many knowledges that you have, and they're all on equal footing, then we wouldn't call you exactly a Brahmanishtha. Brahmanishtha means the one whom there is nothing but Brahman. And that person who sees the whole, and who sees the whole is the whole. Person who sees the whole is the whole. And seeing the whole, you are the whole, and then you know this, and you know this, and you know this. But they're certainly not on equal footing, right? You are the whole, and you know this, you know this, you know this, and you do this, and you do this, and you do this, and you do this, right? You have to take care of this body, you have to earn money, you have to do this, you have to do that, and you have to do that. But all of this is in the context, right, of your vision. So the vision is primary. That person's a Brahmanishtha. Right? They're a Kshatriya because they have thoroughly gained this knowledge to the point of being able to pass it on according to Sampradaya. And they're a Brahmanishtha because for that person, there's nothing but Brahman. We say, I am Brahman, I am the whole. That is their knowledge, that is the reality, and that's the position that they... That it's not possible to come from another position. In fact, just think of the logic of this. If you know, I am the whole. You know that. So you know that. I am, you know, I am Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi, you know, I am Brahman. And you know what that means. I am Brahman, you know, I am the whole. And that's who you are. So now what other position are you going to be coming from? See what I mean? If that's who you are, and that's therefore how you see reality, and how you experience this creation, and how you and how you understand the goings on within the creation. And that's your framework. That's your vision. And that's who you are. It comes from your own being. Then that's your perspective. That's Brahmanishtha. If you don't see the reality, see yourself from that perspective, then you don't know yourself. Then what perspective are you seeing yourself from? Well, you're seeing yourself from the perspective of the body, or perspective of the jiva. I am this body living within this creation. Or a person who has Brahmanishtha, there's still the body here, there's still the sense organs here, there's still the mind here, there's still all activity here. But this body, mind, sense organs, which I'm identified with as much as a samsari is identified with, this is important too. As long as you have a body, you are identified with this physical body. This physical body, you know, reflects consciousness. You're identified with your mind, not your mind. Right? Not somebody else's mind. You're also not identified with Ishwara's mind. Ishwara means the total, infinite creation. That's not your experience either. Your experience, a direct experience of the physical body with sense organs and with mind and with thoughts. But this body, mind, sense organs is very much a part of the total, in the same way that a wave is very much a part of the ocean, right? This body, mind, sense organs, which I have an intimate which has an intimate experience with consciousness, and that your mind reflects consciousness, your body reflects consciousness like that, and your mind reflects consciousness, your mind reflects consciousness. Those are all unique experiences. But all of those unique experiences belong to Ishvara. They all belong to Ishvara. Just like in the dream, you are the whole, but every individual within the dream has a unique experience. But a dream jnani is the one who recognizes that dream character with the unique experience is part and parcel of the whole, and that whole is not in any way away from my being. In fact, that whole is the total knowledge. You see that? So it's not what I want to, when we're onto this Brahmanishtra, because there's so many misconceptions about what that is. That's why I'm spending a few more minutes on it. If I go back to the dream analogy, you can imagine the dream character having knowledge that this is a dream, and that this whole dream is just a projection of myself. It's really an expression of my knowledge. Do they say that? If it's your dream, it's an expression of your knowledge. You as the dream character can gain that understanding very clearly. And you will gain direct, immediate knowledge of your own presence, that your being, when the dream character says, I am, that the I am that they're referring to is the I am, is the self from which the whole dream comes. That dream character can also analyze all of the experiences within the dream to realize the interconnectedness of everything within that dream projection, and to see the body, mind, sense organs, everything that makes you, an individual, separate from you and separate from you, is part and parcel of that dream creation, and that your being, in fact, is the stable presence of that whole. Now, that dream character, knowing that, still retains a physical body, as long as the body is there, still retains sense organs, still retains mind, a mind, can still think, can still relate to the world, right? Can still function, but the knowledge with which they're functioning is quite a bit different. Because that dream character, if it's a jnani, recognizes their own presence, the changelessness of their own presence, and recognizes the changelessness of that presence as pervasive to the whole. That's a different perspective. And so the dream character functioning within duality at the same time knows, I am the whole. From what perspective? From the perspective of the awareful being that I am, which is the very basis of the whole projection. And so the one who is a Brahmanishtha knows the ahankara, the I notion, resolves into the self, which is changeless, right? When your self, which is changeless and not objectifiable, that self, which is not objectifiable, can't be contained in any object in the world. The self, which is not objectifiable, doesn't have a shape. It's not subject to change. And so that self, which is non-objectifiable, is the very substrate being of the world. Why do I say substrate being? Because everything in the world is never away from the self. It's like saying, you can say that the rope is the substrate being of the snake, if you want to use words like this. I'm trying to tell you why we would even use a word like that. The rope is the substrate being of the snake. Because the rope never goes through any change, the snake has no being apart from it. But the snake can come and go upon it, right, as though upon it. So like that, when we do this viveka, recognizing myself as the innermost being, that is the innermost, when we say innermost being, what's that in relationship to? The viveka, in relationship to my body, in relationship to my mind, in relationship to my sense organs, because all of these things can be objectified. I'm aware of my body, I'm aware of my sense organs, I'm aware of my mind, I objectify all these things, I'm aware of the world. And so the self, when I do this type of drik drisha, is left as that which cannot be objectified. That's why it's called innermost being, because it can't be objectified. Now look, we start with calling it innermost being. Start with calling the self innermost being. Okay? But look at what happens. When you objectify your body, what happens is you recognize, this is what you recognize. In this world, in this room, I'm objectifying all of your bodies. You're an object, you're an object, you're an object of my awareness. That's what I mean. I'm objectifying this room. It's all of this thing, everything in this room is an object of my awareness. I'm objectifying the room. When I objectify the body, this body becomes part of the bodies. I'm now one of the, this body is one of the bodies in the room, which I'm objectifying it, you know? And so now this idea of innermost being, which was the innermost being of this body, if this body is put into the room, then this innermost being becomes the innermost being of the room. You see that? If I put this body in the room as one of the objects that I'm aware of, then I'm aware of all of the objects in the room. Is that right? If through my eyes, right? Through my eyes, I have a sense perception of this room and all of the bodies in the room. I usually don't recognize the simple fact that this physical body is also one of the bodies in the room. Now I'm asking you to recognize that. Okay, so now when you recognize, okay, through my sense organs, I'm aware of the entire room, which includes my body. I started out with myself being the innermost being of the body, the one who illumines the body. Okay? But if I put the body in the room, then I'm the innermost being not of the body, I'm the innermost being of the room. Because the body is an object in the room just as you are and you are and you are and you are. I could say, well, I'm the innermost being. It's really my sense organs that are knowing the room and this physical body. And then I can say, well, my mind is aware of my sense organs. Now, just as all of your sense organs are in the room and perceiving, my sense organs are also in the room. And so now I am the innermost being of all of the bodies and all of the sense organs. Because these are all part of what is being perceived. Now if I look at, okay, my mind also is being perceived. I'm the innermost being of my mind. Okay, that's fine. I'm the innermost being of my mind, which perceives the sense organs and perceives the room. Okay, I'm the innermost being of my mind, but what's included in my body, in my mind? The room, all of the bodies, this body, and these sense organs. And if I'm the innermost being of that of the mind itself, what about the ahankara, the I notion? Yeah, that's an object too. So innermost being stops being innermost being to the body. It's not innermost being. It's only initially innermost being to the body. It's only initially innermost being to the sense organs and to the mind. But once the mind, the body, the sense organs, everything that makes you a jiva is given back to Ishwara, given back to the creation, that I am the innermost being of the creation. Because I've given this body as an object to the creation. I've given the mind, the sense organs, and the mind as objects to the creation. And so now who does this innermost being? It's the innermost being of what? Of the whole. And so then, if you let the whole of this jiva, this body, mind, sense organs, be part of Ishwara, which it is, there's nothing here that is not part of the whole. Just like in the dream, it's not like the creature you are in the dream is removed in any way from the dream. It's part and parcel of the dream. And you are the innermost being of the creature? No. And yes, you're the innermost being of the whole. And the creature, the individual in the dream, is part of the whole. And you are the innermost being of that whole. The creature, the individual, needs to learn that. And that the individual has to start somewhere, right? You have to start with yourself, because that's where the Dehatma Buddhi is. That's where the identification is, that I am this physical body. So that's where we have to start. But in that process, what happens is the body gets given to the dream or to the world. The sense organs are given to the dream, to the world. The mind is given to the dream or to the world. And then each time you give part of the upadhi over to Ishwara, to the whole, you become the innermost being of that. The innermost being keeps increasing. Its body keeps increasing. Until in the end, you are the innermost being, the self of the whole. Right? And that is Ishwara. You, in fact, are Ishwara. From the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, it will have limited knowledge. But in your understanding, in terms of this drisha, in terms of giving over this upadhi to what it really belongs to, which is Bhagavan, which is the whole, as you do that, the limitations of your being are released. This, your being has the limitation of the body only when you take yourself to be the body. That's a mistake. That's the ignorance. You think that you're indwelling the body. But when the body is given to the creation, you're not indwelling the body, you're indwelling the creation. When your mind is given to the creation, you're not indwelling your mind. You're indwelling Hiranyagarbha, you're to Ishwara. And so, in this recognition, as you give these things over, the limitations that you've placed on your being are no longer present. To this point, that now, the conscious self that you are, who you really are, this one who right now, who is normally identified with the body because of ignorance, the same very self, is now you recognize that there is nothing. There is nothing in this creation that's away from me. If you can say that there's nothing in my mind that's away from me, just experientially, if you have a thought, and you can go ahead, and if you can put your body and your sense organs in the thought, like the thought of this room, right? Everybody can do that, right? Because you're aware that, as you're aware of this room through your sense organs, through the use of your sense organs, that your body is in this room as much as everything else. Right? For everybody? If that is so, then this entire thought is illumined by you. Say if we look at just in terms of a vritti, thought modification. Is there any part of this thought modification that is away from your being? You have to say no. There can't be. Let me give you an easier example. If you just have a subjective, if I ask you to shut your eyes and imagine a meadow, a meadow, and you're walking through a meadow, is there any part of that imagination that is away from you? There's the creature in the meadow that you're the person of the meadow you're identified with. There's maybe the rabbits and animals, and there's the sun and the moon and whatever, clouds, sky, trees, and meadow. The whole meadow is in you. There's not one part of it that is more or less you in that meadow. Right? The whole thing is your knowledge. Right, that meadow, the whole thing is your meadow. The whole meadow is your knowledge. Right? And none of it is in any way apart from you. If the meadow comes and it goes, it comes and it goes as you bring that thought there. The whole thing is you. Right? How is this different? How is it different? Because this body, your sense organs and your mind are all part of the room. They're part of what is objectified. And so how is your perception of this room, the totality of your experience, which includes the room, which includes the body, which includes your sense organs, which includes any thoughts or feelings, anything that's going on, all as a manifestation of your knowledge, how is any of it apart from you? How is it different than your perception of the meadow in your mind, the imagination? And so that's what needs to be seen. The Dehatma Buddhi is so much that we think I am here in the room. Right? And in one sense, I am this body, mind, sense organs is here in the room. But this body, mind, sense organs, and the room, and all beings in the room are in me. And that is my experience. I just need that. I need to make that little differentiation there. So the day, I have to get rid of this. For the moment, anyway, I get rid of this dehatma buddhi. So I say, just take your being, the awareful being that you are, and put it in the center. Spread yourself. Spread your being to just recognize this whole thing is in me. And recognize that you are not contained in this body. You're not contained in this body. You're not contained. But this experience is not away from you. No experience is away from you. If you look up into the sky, to the vast sky, that experience, the entirety of that experience is not away from you. There is no experience ever away from you. But the total experience available to the jiva mind, the individual mind, and sense organs, right, is limited. However, even though it is limited, whatever experiences or knowledge is there, that knowledge is not away from you. And that knowledge is not contained by any object. That awareful being is not contained by any object within the totality of your knowledge, the totality of your experience. And for Ishvara, the only difference is that the totality of knowledge is infinite. These upadis, body, mind, sense organs, are contained within the creation, within Ishvara. And they have their own little mini Ishvaras. Right? In a sense, these jivas, because of your ability to dream, ability to have thoughts, you have your own little Ishwaratvam within your mind and your ability to project, your ability to imagine, your ability to dream, all of this, your little Ishvara of your own subjective Ishvara. But the total Ishvara, right, is the same me, right, but from the standpoint of the infinite manifestation of knowledge of which these upadis are all a part. But you can recognize just through infinite extension, limitless extension, that if through the logical extension, if my being, right, if my being is not an object, but all objects in fact are illumined by me, I am the non-objectifiable subject, and so all the objects in this room are not away from me, right, but I am the subject and they are the object. What is going to change that in reference to the entire creation? Non-objectifiable means non-objectifiable. Yourself will never be an object. Nor can anything be apart from you. Because you're the very being that everything enjoys. So that's a little more and we'll get into that later. And so anyway, the Brahmanishta, for the Brahmanishta, there is nothing, there is no possibility of being away from that vision. There's no possibility of that vision not being primary. Because it's not a vision of something else. It's you. It is your nature. And so the person who is a Brahmanishta, if they're a Brahmanishta and a Kshatriya, they can teach you. Right? They need to be a Kshatriya. If they're a Brahmanishta, And they haven't been trained in terms of the sampradaya, the teaching methodologies that are involved in this teaching. They're just a Brahmanishta. Then you will love to be in their presence, and they will be very inspiring to you. And chances are they can't make you what they are, and they may not want to. They may just want to be themselves. But if they're a Kshatriya and a Brahmanishta, then you'll enjoy being in their presence, probably. And you'll also to be able to be like them. Because in reality, right, just think of the dream. There's the dream, there's the dream person who becomes a mumukshu, and there's everybody else, right? Is the dream person mumukshu's truth any different than everybody else's? It's all exactly the same. Yeah. Everybody is only Brahman. It's not that the Jnani is Brahman and everybody else isn't. Everybody is, everything is only Brahman. That's it. Right? And so that's what needs to be recognized. But to recognize that, that's a long way to go. Right? From somebody who's just a limited creature subject to birth and death, living in this creation, to recognizing I am the whole. You can't just go up and tell somebody, oh, don't worry about anything, you're the whole. There's a whole sampradaya, there's a teaching methodology involved in that. And then so the guru, the teacher, is the one who can teach that. And to teach it, these two qualities are hopefully there, the Kshatriya and the Brahmanishta. If the Brahmanishta is there and a Kshatriya, then they totally know what they're talking about. That's a good thing. That's why approach for the one who is a Viveki, who's recognized the problem. In order to gain this knowledge, you must approach a guru who is a Kshatriya and a Brahmanishta. Also, Shankara said in this verse, don't think you know. Say you're a great Sanskrit pundit and you've learned all of the Vedas, you can chant them backwards and forwards. So you just think, no, I'll study by myself. He says, no. He has a beautiful statement. He says, there are so many Vedanta Vakyas, there's so many things the Upanishads say, and because there are so many things they say, there are so many doubts. Right? So many Vakyas, so many statements, so many doubts. Right? And so, the one who has the vision of the whole can take you through each one of these statements. You don't have the vision of the whole. Right? You don't have the vision of what it is. And so the teacher is the one who, you know, wielding that means of that pramana, needs to take you there. So don't think you can do it alone. That's what Shankara says in this particular verse. And so now, to him or her, the one who has viveka, has recognized this problem, that vidvan, who has the brahmanishta, and is a kshatriya, that teacher, that one who knows, vidvan, remember this vat affix, means one who possesses vid, knowledge. Vidvan, like Bhagavan is in the nominative singular. So vidvan, the one who has knowledge. Vid means knowledge. So that vidvan, that vidvan saha means what? That one that we've been talking about. The one who's a brahmanishta, the one who's a kshatriya. That vidvan, to the one, to him, tasmai, to the viveki, upasanaya samyak. Who has approached properly? Who has approached him properly? What does that mean? A person can come to the teacher and ask for this knowledge, please teach me, but then the knowledge they may be wanting to receive may not be the knowledge that the teacher has to give. You know? Bhagavan, I want to be free. Please teach me how to astral travel. Where the person has not yet understood the problem. So they've approached the teacher, you know, for knowledge, but they haven't approached the teacher properly in the sense that they're not yet in a position to receive what the teacher has to give because they are looking for something else. There's other ways to take that, too. They don't approach the teacher according to tradition or with any type of respect or this type of thing. But really when you get down to it and how Swamiji deals with this, I think it's really beautiful. If they don't come to the teacher with a proper question, right? What the teacher has to give, what the Upanishads have to give, is not at all what the student is looking for. Even though they say they're looking for liberation or moksha, they have a totally different idea of what that is. And what that is something still to be achieved through karma in samsara. Right? So moksha could be going to Brahmaloka, could be going to a heaven world, It could be astral traveling. It could be learning to, it could be the acquirement of siddhis. It could be the practice of samadhi. It could be attaining yoga asanas. It could be so many different things. We don't know what it is. But that becomes clear to the teacher. But here it says, for that student, to that student who has approached properly, who is prashanta chittaya, whose mind has become prashanta. Prashanta means whose mind has become quiet. Means the vairagya is there. In other words, the mind isn't being split into all kinds of directions. You know, I want this and I want this and I want a little knowledge too. The mind isn't after all of these things anymore. It may later enjoy doing all kinds of things, but first things first. There comes a time when I need to have this problem solved. This becomes primary. Just to earn my bread, I might have to do other things. But first things first, this is what is most important to me. I don't care about the other things. I'm doing them for survival and so that I can manage. This is what I need. This is what I want. And so I become, that prashanta is there. Because of the vairagya, I'm not split. I know the vairagya is there. I'm seeking to know myself. Right? And so these other types of things have dropped off. Shankara says something kind of interesting here. He says, prashanta chittaya uparata darpadi doshaya. He says for the one whose mind has become quiet, the one who's no longer arrogant, darpa. It's interesting. The one for whom such things as pride and arrogance and, you know, feeling I can handle, maybe what he's thinking is, you know, really, as long as you think you can solve this problem, right, by doing something, I can do it, I can take care of it, you know. You haven't understood. So maybe that's what he means there by the darpa, the arrogance. You know, I can do it. If I do this, this, and that, I can be happy. I know what I'm doing. I know how to make my life. I know how to make myself whole and complete. I just need this, this, and this. I'm sure I can accomplish all of these things and all will be well. I'm cool. I'm on top of it. No problem. So what about when a person, that can, some, you know, variant of darpa there. What about when the person realizes there is nothing I can do? That's a huge realization. It's scary, too. You realize there's nothing I can do because there is no amount of doing, no matter how well done, can solve this problem. Any amount of doing will produce time-bound results, and that's the nature of the creation. So the solution to this is not something that I can do. Right? I can't accomplish it. And so there's a humility in that, a humbleness in that. You know, and the other, the ahankar, is still alive and well. The ahankar means that ego. I can do this. I can take care of this problem. What about when you recognize that there is no possibility of you or anybody else taking care of this problem? Then you might go to a teacher with the proper attitude. Kind of nice. I mean, really, when you think of it, this is not a big issue. This is a big thing, because when a person recognizes there is no solution available to me, then the attitude that you would have in approaching a teacher would be different than when you're still thinking you have the solutions, right? And actually, you do have to come to that recognition that there is nothing I can do to solve this problem, because any amount of doing will only produce a finite result. That needs to be understood. That is key. It's a key understanding. And when you understand that, then going to a teacher, there's a totally different heart in that. So I think that's why I must say that there. So prashanta chittaya, then shamanvitaya. Shamanvitaya means the one who is possessed of these qualities like shama, dhamma, upadati, tatiksha, all of these qualities of mind. We'll do it next week. Okay? I'm going to spend a little more time. So these verses are key verses, so I'm going a little bit in depth. There's still more that I have to cover also.
Should we bring book two?
Bring book two. Though, I can't promise that we'll get there. Bring it anyway. Yeah, bring book two, along with book one. So let's just take a minute. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.